Contacts on the water tower, Avery said to Jenkins and Forsell. Just watch them until I say different. The roof's steep incline made prone or kneeling positions impractical, so the two recruits were forced to stand and rest their weapons on top of the ventilation stack. Not an ideal sniping stance as far as stability was concerned, but at least they had a good view of the yard and a clean line of sight to the tower.
Staff Sergeant, Jenkins began.
Mm-hmm.
The primary, it's following Dry Creek Road.
The recruit looked up from his battle rifle. His face was lined with worry.
Has Max seen anyone else coming in that way?
I'll ask, Avery said. But you gotta stay focused, clear?
Okay, Jenkins whispered. Thanks, Staff Sergeant.
Forsell shot Avery a worried look. I know, Avery nodded. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw another pair of insects flit up the side of a building at the western end of the main street and settle under a rooftop billboard that read Ida Mercantile in cheerful block letters. Avery thrust a finger at the bugs, refocusing Forsell's attention.
2 at 10 o'clock, Forsell said. Got 'em?
Yeah, Jenkins swallowed hard and leaned back into his rifle. Yeah, I got 'em.
Avery raised his hand to pat Jenkins' shoulder, but he held back. Frowning, he continued to march to a nearby service ladder. When Thune had broadcast news of the aliens' arrival almost a week ago, no one had any idea they would strike the town of Gladsheim. In fact, despite the governor's unprecedented all-comm address, a speech broadcast live to every public and private communication device on the planet, Harvest's population had reacted to the news of first contact with shocked disbelief. Thune had finished his address with the demand that everyone not already residing in Utgard move to the capital. But this failed to trigger the large and rapid migration the governor desired. When Thune reinforced his message with heavily censored footage from the parley in the gardens, the public's inaction quickly changed to outrage.
How long has the governor known? Citizens asked. What else does he know that he isn't telling us?
Members of Harvest's parliament quickly aligned themselves with the public mood and threatened a vote of no confidence if the governor didn't release more details about his dealings with the aliens. But all this politicking was simply a way to pass the time, an effort to do something while the aliens themselves did nothing. For a week after the parley, the creatures sat quietly in their warship until, without warning, they quit high orbit and dropped toward Gladsheim. Thune had sent another desperate evacuation order, but it had little effect. The families around Gladsheim had chosen not just to migrate to Harvest, the most remote colony in the Empire, but also to live on the outskirts of the planet's most remote settlement, as far from human civilization as they could get. They were strong, independent people who preferred to stay settled and ride things out. And today, they paid dearly for their inclination. In the 3 hours it took the militia to muster from their temporary encampment on the Parliament building's lawn, board a cargo container, and head down the number 4 maglev line to Gladsheim, dozens of the most distant homesteads had been hit. And one of those belonged to Jenkins' parents. At the bottom of the ladder, Avery backtracked east through the terminal. A line of evacuees now stretched across the cavernous building, parents hefting overstuffed suitcases, kids toting tiny backpacks emblazoned with the anthropomorphic stars of public comm cartoons. Avery saw a blonde-haired 3 or 4 year old girl still dressed in her pajamas. She smiled at Avery with wide, adventurous eyes, and he knew her parents must have worked hard to keep a desperate situation fun.
I'm sorry, Dale. Just one per customer, Max said.
A second avatar hovered above a hollow projector built into an inventory scanner that stood where the terminal's loading ramp met the container door. Here, Healy and the 1B squad were busy distributing ration packs from plastic bins.
Oh, you got one for Leaf.
Mac winked at a young boy with sleep-matted hair hiding behind his father's legs.
Everything'll be all right,
the AI said as the boy winked back. If a farmer's Jotun broke down, or he accidentally burst an irrigation line, Mac was always there to help. More often than not, the AI would initiate the comm, offering friendly, free advice long before someone realized they even had a problem. In essence, Mac was everyone's favorite uncle,
And now his familiar avatar did much more to keep the refugees calm than the militiamen and their guns. But oddly, the AI had been uneager to appear. During a quick briefing in Thune's parliament office before the militia left for Gladsheim, Mac had expressed that he would rather help with the evacuation behind the scenes. He never actually refused to manifest in Gladsheim's terminal, but Avery now noticed Mac did sound a little stiff, his good humor more forced than it had been at the solstice celebration. Part of this might have been an effort to respect the day's tragic events, but whatever the reason, the AI's personality quirks weren't Avery's concern. Lieutenant Commander Al Signy had spent a great deal more time with Mac than he, and during the briefing, she'd taken the AI's reticence in stride. Avery paced out of the terminal building parallel to the line of refugees until he reached the gate. Byrne was already standing beside Ponder, but the captain waited for Avery to draw close before he announced in a harsh whisper, "Some of Mac's Jotuns just spotted a convoy heading through the vineyards."
"How many vehicles?" Avery asked.
Ponder looked to Mac. The AI must have been monitoring their conversation because after tipping his hat to a stocky, gray-haired woman holding the hands of her two grandchildren, the AI flashed a wide, stretched hand. 5. Avery had seen the vineyards from the roof, their evenly spaced rows of trellised vines stretched out from town in all directions. Most of the grapes were for everyday consumption, but some were grown for wine. Indeed, sampling the product of the region's small family wineries was the main reason Utgard's more genteel population ever bothered to make the all-day drive to Gladsheim across the Ida.